Ready to go? Convening the Redmond Public Safety Subcommittee for Tuesday, May 4th. We will have a public hearing on House Bill 1514, the Criminal Justice Commission. The chair will entertain a motion to disband the agency.
I'm not that extreme, Mr. Chair.
Leave him a penny. Maybe we should have a public hearing first.
I think we ought to allow him to speak before we set the press sentence.
Well, okay. Hey, we are having a subcommittee of the subcommittee, are we not, so far? Okay. We'll have, obviously, a public hearing in House Bill 1514, and we will begin today with comments from LFO staff.
Thank you. Chair Weston, committee members, the Criminal Justice Commission will be before you today. We'll probably have a little bit of a public hearing tomorrow on a bill that was passed that related to some interim study responsibilities the Criminal Justice Commission participated in, and a work session tomorrow. But suffice it to say, if we can get through the public hearing and your questions, we'll address those outstanding ones at the end of the meeting tomorrow.
Let me interrupt you for just a moment and adjourn the sub of the sub and convene the subcommittee.
Chair Wesley, committee members, the commission, in terms of background information for you, the budget, they had no prior biennium budget notes to report on. They did appear before the emergency board three times in the interim. Each of those times were in effect for related to adult Measure 11 grant study that they are in the process of doing both this biennium and next biennium, and you'll hear more about during the presentation. There were no audits that were done during the 1997-99 interim. And as far as policy issues that are before you related to this budget, the major ones relate to the juvenile crime prevention package and the commission's role in the administration and evaluation of a piece of that. It's about a $20 million package in here for that particular role. The commission's role in the administration of the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act, which is a federal program. The governor, by executive order, named them to be agency administering that program as well, so their role there. And beyond that, just what the necessary staffing and funding is for them to continue to work toward fulfilling their primary role, which is to develop and maintain a comprehensive criminal justice plan. Beyond that, they have some budget-related legislation that is out there that we may see in the subcommittee. One bill in particular, House Bill 2937, passed out of the House Civil Law Committee on its way to Ways and Means, and if we have time today, talk about that a little bit because it's a bill that closely relates to the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Account and the Commission's ability to use funds from that account. It couldn't be here in time to do it with the budget, which would have been my preference, but we will get to it when it gets here. House Bill 3169 actually abolishes the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Committee, and that bill received its last public hearing on April 20th, and I'm not sure whether it's on its way here or not. House Bill 2454 is a bill that would require the Commission to take on some more responsibilities relative to the sentencing process and to do some more studies, and that bill is in House Criminal Law. May or may not have a fiscal impact. One hasn't been done yet. With that, I'll turn it over to Phil Lennon for his overview.
Very good. Questions for staff at this juncture? Phil?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Phil Lennon, I'm the Director of the Criminal Justice Commission. This meeting started out much like it did last session, but the agency's changed, so I'll try to make my presentation a little different for you. I have given you a handout with just some brief talking points. Attached that also is a list of commission members and some of the actions that I will try to avoid using. The commission is an agency that has six full-time employees. It also has seven members, and it's getting to the point now where we have some difference with the legislature's kind of sliced off some of the activities that the agency does as an entity as opposed to the activities of the commission as a public body. But the commission was created as a new agency in 1995. It creates replaced the Criminal Justice Council and had many of the same functions, but substantially different structure. The council was a 24-member body that had a constituency base, so there were legislators, judges, chiefs, sheriffs, district attorneys on it, and the commission is a 7-member body that is has no slots. It is appointed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate, and must, by statute, have both geographic and political diversity. The purpose of the agency is to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of state and local criminal justice systems by providing a centralized and impartial forum for statewide policy development and planning. And how we interpret that in English is that we're supposed to take a long-range, big-picture look at the criminal justice system and its component parts, both at the state and local level, both in the adult and the juvenile justice system, develop a long-range vision for where the state needs to go and develop a plan for getting there.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator
Hannah. Phil, looking at your mission statement and then trying to relate it to FTE, currently your section is proposing to go to 11.5. To comply with your mission statement, does the additional positions provide you the environment to achieve the mission statement, or I guess I look at the Criminal Justice Commission that was created. We tried to pick something and say, let's evolve into a new role. Clearly delineated the mission, but at the same time, have we given the adequate resources? Because your staff is somewhat limited in the scope that it can take on projects.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, the short answer to the question is no. The budget and the staff that we have is not organized along the same lines as our statutory responsibilities, is the short answer to your question. About half of the 3 staff that we have this biennium are involved in administering the felony sentencing guidelines program. And so that leaves me with a half-time clerical position, a half a research position, and myself to do the other duties, which I'll get to in a minute.
Okay.
The new staff that is proposed in the governor's budget is devoted to the juvenile crime prevention aspects, both in the $30 million administration of the $30 million high-risk juvenile crime prevention partnership, and then also transferring of a program, a grant administration, that is currently in the Commission on Children and Families. And the legal authority to administer those grant funds has been transferred to my commission, and the budget authority is what we're here asking you for.
I want to ask you some more questions on procedurally. How do you achieve these things? Maybe you'll highlight it as you go through here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a real quick follow-up on Senator Hannon. So basically, the additional FTEs that we're seeing here aren't really new people. They're just being transferred from other functions that have been transferred to your agency.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, that's not quite correct. There are 6 positions, 5.5 FTE that are new in this budget. Of those, 1.5 FTE are involved in the transfer. 4 are new positions. And I'll get a little more to that in a little later. Again, the Commission's primary duty is to develop a criminal justice policy and a comprehensive long-range plan for a coordinated criminal justice system. And as I'm sure you've been hearing this other state agency budgets and heard from the constituency groups, you realize that is no small task or undertaking. The statute requires us to include recommendations to the legislature on both the capacity and use of jails and prisons and whether additional facilities are necessary, alternatives to the use of incarceration, how community corrections programs are being implemented and whether additional or different programs are necessary, methods of reducing the risk of future criminal conduct, and methods of assessing the effectiveness of adult and juvenile correctional programs, devices, and sanctions in reducing future criminal conduct. So what we're supposed to do is answer all your questions in 10 pages or less. But in the 1997 legislature added 2 additional pieces. And that, first of all, was adding the juvenile justice system under the commission's purview as well as the adult criminal justice system, and also added the piece on assessing the effectiveness of correctional programs and sanctions and reducing the risk of future criminal conduct. I think you've already heard from the state police on House Bill 2299 and the work group on criminal justice program effectiveness data and research needs, and that's where that additional mandate came. Then we get to the other additional duties that Senator Hanna was discussing, and those are to administer the felony sentencing guidelines, to analyze state and local sentencing practices, to conduct joint research studies with other agencies, to provide criminal justice information to federal agencies, provide technical assistance to the local public safety coordinating councils that are established in each county, to staff the Active Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee, to provide staff to the Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee, and if that isn't enough, we have voluntarily taken on the function of estimating the correction impact of proposed legislation. And again, to accomplish that, both the primary and the other duties, the Commission has 6 FTE permanent staff, and to do some of the preliminary policy development and planning on the juvenile crime prevention activities, we have 2 limited duration staff this time. And what we're spending most of our time right now is following the Judiciary Committees on both sides and, again, trying to provide you with information on the estimated fiscal impact of crime-related legislation. There were 40 bills introduced this session to create or modify felony crimes, and there's probably an equal number that would have something to do with sentences, felony sentences, or probation or post-prison supervision revocation. And so what we do is consult with local district attorneys, judges, defense attorneys, community corrections offices to try to figure out if they get this new or different authority, how it will be used, and turn that into a number of beds or a caseload number that DOC can cost out and present to you.
Representative Schroeder.
I don't have the history of how the original Justice Commission came about or the CJC. Looking at the duties, it would appear to me that some of the existing agencies couldn't surely be doing these. Like all the bed stuff, the Department of Corrections should be kind of figuring out, I would think, or away for their area. And methods of sanctioning, effectiveness, I mean, some of it would be parole stuff. Some would be done at the county level. The LIPTICs, I would think, hopefully be able to work together. Maybe 5 minutes on that if somebody's okay with that. The Senator probably could give us the answer.
Well, it used to be a criminal justice council. And primarily it was a system set in place to look at sentencing guidelines. We passed the matrix system on sentencing. And it was created to have an oversight but an independent voice in corrections and saying, based upon these kinds of sentences, this is the type of facility you're going to require. It was to get them out of the agencies, not be aligned with anyone in specific, but give an independent voice and review of what sentencing is doing and what it's doing to driving the correction system. It was changed in 95, from the Criminal Justice Council to the Criminal Justice Commission. The members are all appointed by the governor, and they serve at the pleasure of the governor, and then they're confirmed by the Senate. They are primarily the recipient of federal funds dealing with justice funds that are passed back through to these safety committees or criminal justice committees back from the local level. I think even gave back some money to the local districts or cities for police protection under the federal law enforcement mechanism that was passed. So the intent of it, Representative, is to have an independent, not aligned with any specific interest of any agency or anything, and have that independent role and assessment. And then its primary function has been to serve to report to the legislature on functions that the judicial department is doing and the juvenile justice department is doing and corrections is doing and all these report.
So just like an individual, an individual assessment, not related to.
It's a non-affiliated. It's a non-affiliated, independent assessment.
So I can understand better, kind of on the ground, that in connection with the prison fighting issue. the projections of prison population have been very much an issue, and I had always thought that those were coming out of DOC, that those, in fact, were coming from your commission?
No, they come out of gas.
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, on the prison population estimates, that was a function that was in the Criminal Justice Council up through 1995. When the commission was created, that function was transferred to the Department of Administrative Services in the Office of Economic Analysis, so it fit in with the other, the revenue population and other forecasting functions. So we have not done that and do not seek any additional authority in that area.
That's right. Well, I guess I was just looking at this. It said capacity and use of jails and prisons and whether additional or different facilities are necessary. So I guess you work with DAS and their projections and then try to let them know how does that work?
The Dale Penn, who is the commission chair, is Marion County District Attorney, is a formal member of the Technical Advisory Committee to the Prison Population Forecasting Function. I also sit on those meetings, as does committee staff, and I have a research analyst who deals with the fencing issues, who works with the analyst who does the prison population forecasting. So we are involved in that, but that is not our process. What I think the legislature wanted the commission to be able to do is to step back and say, who are we putting in prison? Are we putting the right people in prison? Or do we have the right kind of facilities for those people? Who should be in prison? Who should be in jail? How are the community corrections working in terms of having a comprehensive system of sanctions and services to deal with the offender population? And so to tie that in with Representative Schrader's original question, my view of what the commission was intended to do was to provide both objectivity, so you don't have DOC telling you how many beds they think they will need, and then also a capacity, because not every local public safety coordinating council, not every county has the ability to kind of step back and look at some of the trends and to try to put the pieces together. And I know, I would assume from your experience here, you know how difficult it is to, when you're caught up in the crush of things, to try to keep looking at the big picture and see how those pieces fit together. So that's the role that I see the commission is trying to fill. And we haven't really, I don't think KRS tried to be able to do that yet, and to work with the legislature and the other executive agencies to really get a grip on that, but that's what we're working toward.
Representative Minnis.
This is actually for Senator Hammond. Do you think it's possible that the commission appointed by the governor to have independence of what the governor may want?
You know, that's a real interesting philosophical question. You could ask the same thing. Does the public utility commissioner exemplify that same independence? Does the Board of Higher Education? And I would candidly say yes, that they do exemplify that sense of independence, and they recognize that they're appointed by the governor, but I can take you back in time to the Tea administration. There's probably as many Democrats appointed to state licensure boards and commissions as there were Republicans. And partisanship never played an issue in it. They felt that they were there to represent the law as they were being charged to administer it, not maybe, hey, I'm a little bit more this way than that way.
Just follow up. If the governor doesn't like a bill and they're projecting what a fiscal is going to be or what the impact is going to be on legislation, and all of a sudden that fiscal turns into something minor, something major, because the governor doesn't like the bill, what is your take on that?
Well, under the separation of powers, I guess I would say the governor has to propose and it's up to us to dispose. And quite frankly, if we disagree with his position on an issue, then it's up to us in the legislative assembly to muster the necessary votes, either override the veto or sustain the veto. But my position is, I think that the creation of this commission was intended to create some semi-autonomy and still said to stand back and look at it objectively and then report. And it has broad representation around the state.
Thank you.
Chair, just to briefly follow up, if I may, you know, on the independence issue, that obviously I think is an issue no matter who does the appointing. But the statute does provide that we have both geographic and partisan political diversity on the commission. There cannot be more than a simple majority from one party or the other.
But just follow up. Does the commission, if you're looking at a bill and looking at impact, who studies the bill to develop impacts on the
Mr. Chair, that is not a that's one of the agency versus public body issues. The commission, the bills I take to the, let me back up. The commission has decided that it's not going to get involved in taking positions on individual pieces of legislation, except as they affect the commission as an agency. And so the commission has not, I consult with them about what my activities are and how the legislative process is going. I rarely go to them and say, I'd like you to take a position on this bill so I can go represent the position of the commission. The fiscal or the debt impact analysis, the corrections analysis is a staff function that I supervise that we work closely with committee staff on and judiciary staff with. I have to say it's an evolving process. The last session was my first session doing that, and frankly there was much more scrutiny in the legislative process of those impact statements than there was in previous years. The other issue that I know is of particular interest to you is that the bill, the mail theft bill last session, the governor vetoed, never went to the Ways and Means Committee for any kind of discussion or review of the impact estimate. And frankly, one of the things that I'm trying to do a better job of this session is to make sure that the committee council knows when we think or when we know when that any bill is going to trip that $50,000 threshold and require referral. And I don't have it with me today. I can try to get to you tomorrow is a list of some of the bills that are going to either are on their way here or are down here in the Ways and Means Committee for that kind of review.
Well, if my memory serves me right, on that particular issue, it started out very small. It didn't need to be referred, and then by the time it got transferred over, it was huge. So, and that's not what we're here about today. I'm just wondering about the independence issue. We'll move on.
This is a personal blame right here. I love that stuff. If anything goes wrong with the numbers,
Representative Patrick.
I'd like to say to the people who are listening in the governor's office, probably, that I would like to see a little bit more geographic diversity. There's two people from Eugene and two people from Salem. Nobody from Southern Oregon or the coast. There's a couple Eastern Oregon people, but, you know, and I know, I guess our token Southern Oregon person is Tom Leininger since he grew up in Ashland. His mother's still in South Oregon, but it would be nice to see some.
He's a deputy DA here in Marion County.
He's a phenomenal guy. It would be nice to see a little bit more geographic diversity.
If I could follow up on he's correct ultimately in that when the agency submits fiscal impact information, we do try to test the assumptions, try to make sure we agree in principle with what they're doing. And that particular bill was a learning process both for the agency and LFO in terms of how it was handled. There was some incomplete information, and we put out a fiscal without actually having everything we needed. I can assure you from our standpoint, we were not in a pro or against the bill. It was trying to put out what we believe to be was, you know, most representative costs. And there was paper trickling in piecemeal information. And we try to minimize any opportunities for that to happen, try to land on a reasonable fiscal and the percent that goes out and not have a change. That was a very, sticks out as an example of one that didn't. We do try to minimize that.
Thank you.
Back at the range. Any other individuals want to beat up on Larry?
No, I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I was just being a little light-hearted here today, but no care is absent, and
we were hoping you were serious.
Representative
Kozanski, I do want to just put me on the record since the representative from the Medford area is taking the name in vain of two of my constituents. Doug Harry used to be my second in command, third in command of AG author, Zero J, and Tom is just a fantastic guy that's made his way through the ranks. I think that they're there because of their future life, but it wouldn't hurt to have someone from the staff.
I'd like to move on to Mr. Lemon's presentation.
I think we're starting to talk about the budget.
Have you gone through and up your overview to feel?
Well, I was going to just briefly tell you how the budget's organized and just have a few more minutes and then get it if that's all right.
Let's do that because I want to get to the end of the
day. Yes. We have two program areas in the commission. One is the Criminal Justice Commission activities, which is basically everything except juvenile crime prevention, and then we have the juvenile crime prevention function. And as I mentioned earlier, the Criminal Justice Commission program areas have six FTE. There's an executive manager, which is myself, an office manager, two research analysts, a program technician who is an attorney who administers the felony sentencing guidelines, and an office specialist. In the current biennium, we have two limited duration employees on the juvenile crime prevention activities to assist with the preliminary policy development and planning, and the revised budget makes those two positions permanent and adds 3.5 other FTE for additional grant management, monitoring, and evaluation. I can kind of skip the rest of that, Mr. Chair, if you want to get the other overviews and then go into detail about the budget aspect.
That'd be great. Are you signed off? Let's get through the formal part of the presentation and
sure. I'm sure most of the details will come out in questions if I don't cover them up.
Very good. Greg McGee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill McGee, Department of Administrative Services. The Governor's revised budget for the Criminal Justice Commission is $20.8 million general fund and $24.9 million total fund. That's a substantial increase from the 97-99 legislative approved budget.
Do you have a percentage increase?
We sure have to calculate that.
I have to not do
that. Because of the human crime prevention issue. The budget continues the core criminal justice programs at current levels. It shifts support for the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Committee from general fund to other fund as directed by the last legislature and supports the implementation of the governor's high-risk juvenile crime prevention partnership. The alleged adopted for this agency started at $658,000 general fund, $795,000 total funds with six FTEs, so allocated. E-boards with a salary adjustment and the federal grant to study the impact of Measure 11. Current service level, basically position information cost changes, and then the shift and the support for the Asset Forfeiture Committee from general fund to other funds. There are only two policy packages in this agency, both related to the juvenile crime prevention program. The first is the $20 million of the $30 million. You saw the other $10 million in the authority's budget last week. And this $20 million, $19 is included for prevention grants to counties. And $1 million supports evaluation and administration of the whole juvenile crime prevention program. The commission has a role, as Bill has indicated, of providing support to the juvenile crime prevention advisory committee the governor's appointed. Again, $20 million and four positions in this package. Package 202 is the transfer of the juvenile justice advisory committee. And now we'll unfortunately spend too much time in acronyms here. The federal juvenile justice and delinquency prevention program, which provides funds to the state to provide a juvenile program, requires a juvenile justice advisory committee to provide advice and guidance for the expenditure of those funds. The governor has designated the juvenile crime prevention advisory committee that was established under the new high-risk partnership to serve as the juvenile juvenile crime advisory committee. That function had been performed by the Commission on Children and Families. We're requesting transfer to the Criminal Justice Commission to follow the governor's designation of that authority. It involves in the governor's budget a transfer of $67,000 general fund and $2.4 million federal funds, and it has two positions, 1.5 FTE. There are three adjustments in governor's revised budget. The first is a reduction in general fund. It shifts a small amount of operating costs from general fund to the two federal grants, the Statistical Analysis Center grant and the Ballot Measure 11 grant. That's an $18,000 general fund shift. We're asking for an increase in federal fund expenditure for the Measure 11 grant. There's more carryover funds than we had thought when we put the budget together, about $76,000 other fund. And we're finally asking for an adjustment in the federal fund expenditure limit regarding the juvenile justice and delinquency prevention money to allow the Commission on Children and Families basically to finish their fiscal year 1988 activities and to fund the Criminal Justice Commission fully for fiscal years 99 and what they'd expect to spend out of the fiscal year 2000 awards. And that's an increase of $1.2 million. The overall result reduces general fund by $18,000, increases federal funds by $1.3 million for that position. The only real thing missing from the legislative approved budget were some fund shifts to the shots in general fund federal, and the given fund administration violation grant investigation is in the program. Concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Just back of the envelope calculation that and only dealing with general fund, that's only about a 2,800% increase. So I think that's well within the co-chair's guidelines. I don't think we should have an issue here.
Mr. Schroeder?
Senator Hanna.
Bill, the transfers that are suggested here and the IRS Juvenile Crimes Prevention Partnership, that $20 million, that was in the base governor's budget, base recommended budget.
That is 20 of the $30 million.
And $10 million is in youth authority. And then on program 202, or policy 202, is transfer the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee. So are you tied in computer-wise to the Oregon Judicial Information Network, OGIN, and all those things, so that when a case is entered into the computer, that you have access to all those things to coordinate tracking and saying this person was on Measure 11, this person was after the fact, or this person was a juvenile, changed to adult. Can you document all those things, and if we make this transfer, are we recreating something that we created last session, or are we really moving it to a proper function?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, yes, we are connected to OGIN. I wish it enabled us to do all the things that you rattled off, but it doesn't. In order to tell if someone was a Measure 11 offender, we use OGIN, our own sentencing guidelines database, and Department of Corrections. People still are being sentenced for Measure 11 offenses that occurred prior to the enactment of Measure 11. So when we do the data run, you will see less than 70-month mandatory minimum sentences for some Measure 11 offenses. And that kind of makes everybody sit back and scratch their head and try to figure out what's going on here. And then last session, the legislature allowed some departure sentences, some less than Measure 11 sentences for certain types of assaults and robberies. And so that, again, kind of muddies the water in that sense. But so the data is not that clean, but yes, we do use OGIN to verify our data and this as part of our overall analysis. As far as how that relates to the package 202, the reason this is here is that when the governor wanted to make juvenile crime prevention investments in the general fund money, we went around and looked at many different agencies, what their programs were, what their funding streams were, and try to look at which ones could best be coordinated with that. And this federal grant stream was one that is federal money that clearly applies to juvenile delinquency prevention. And so what the governor wanted to do was to put administration of both of those pots of money in the same agency so they could be linked together. So that's the reason this is here. It doesn't really have a direct link with what OGIN does. Once we get JAGIS up and running, and we hope to be able to use that to create more of a seamless tracking system from the juvenile to adult system.
Then,
does that answer your question?
Well, partially. Then these two positions are being transferred over from the Commission on Services to Children and Families?
Off to the Commission on Children and Families.
Or the Commission?
Yes.
They're being transferred from there over to your agency?
Mr. Chair, they're established as new positions in my agency.
They are new positions?
Yeah.
what shows up on the commission there on children and families. And two positions, would you leave it?
Mr. Superintendent, that would be correct. Two positions are deleted from the were deleted in the governor's budget for the commission, children and families, and this amount in general fund and this amount of federal funds were deleted.
Okay.
There's a technical adjustment over there, but essentially, when the governor's budget was produced, these two packages matched.
And these two positions are part of your four. You said there was four new positions out of the 5.5, and 1.5 was. Was an existing position. Is this the 1.5?
Yes.
This existing position?
That would be correct.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, these are existing state positions that are being transferred from one agency to another because
correct.
We want to align the money to the administration.
Yes.
They're new to this agency, but they're not new to the state.
Okay.
One more point, if I could add on the transfer from the Commission of Children and Families. That commission has also modified its role to an extent to focus more on younger children than the juveniles as well. So it supports how their mission is moving forward.
Yes, thanks.
Representative Patrick. So I'd just be interested in seeing from the commission or from GAF or I don't care who it comes from, we've got so many people involved in the juvenile justice arena being switched around and what are we seeing as their kind of their role juvenile justice amongst the various, I mean, there's so many agencies involved, it seems like, doing it. I understand what the governor may be trying to do under his Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee. Maybe he's trying to get everything under that, but I'm trying to get a better understanding of, you know, who all the different players are. And now, if we add the Criminal Justice Commission onto the list of players in juvenile justice, I'm trying to get kind of an overview of, you know, if you're going to be the clearinghouse and that's what the governor wants to do, then, you know, let's look at it that way. But there's not really any clear delineation and lines and coordination, it doesn't appear to me, in terms of where we're going with this, you know, if we're able to fund this.
I might be able to share with some scenarios that will have a little bit of, I think, comfort to where we are right now. Based on the current directions of the co-chairs, we'll probably be taking these packages and reducing them out at this time, because there's a bill out there, Senate Bill 555, and maybe some other bill with policy legislation that's very intent to try and package the juvenile crime prevention package and efforts related to that into the policy legislation, which is on its way to Ways and Means. And I think those are appropriate questions to be asking about how that ultimate package is put together. Right now, the State Commission on Children and Families budget actually maintains when it was passed out of subcommittee. The funds that we were just talking about in package 202 pending this final decision about what the legislature wants to do and how they want to package it.
And I was aware of Senate Bill 555, but I'm trying to get a better understanding. I mean, I'm also going to be asked to, if it makes it over and does everything, I'll be asked to vote on that. I'm trying to see what role the Criminal Justice Commission is going to play. Even if we reduce these packages out, what role are they going to play in juvenile justice? What do they see their role as being? What is their role? The OA and DHR and everything else, who have various fingers in this.
I think that's a good comment. And, I mean, this, though, is an absolutely crystal clear lake, spotless window. You know, any of the can give you compared to what the salmon plan was. that was the most amazing matrix. You know, I was created under God's Son. I mean, it was just incredible. And we still have to work through that thing.
Mr. Chairman, I kind of had a follow-up, too, because we are considering Senate Bill 555 in judiciary, and some of the options that are being considered would provide funding to programs as opposed to these grants. So I'm just wondering how all that's going to fit together. That bill will eventually be going to Ways and Means. And are we just going to hold this up, and then when that bill gets to Ways and Means, we put them all together, or how will that work just in the process?
Sure, what's the committee member? Actually, they either can come to the board, or they can actually amend the appropriation bill that this budget is passing through by a subsequent legislation. They can add to this budget in that policy legislation if they want to, in Ways and Means.
Oh, okay.
So if they ultimately want the funds in the Criminal Justice Commission's budget, there's a way to get them there.
Okay.
even after this budget bill is gone.
And if they, alternatively, if they wanted to take a different approach with that $20 million, I don't anticipate that, but if we do have proposals in front of the committee that would do that, alternatively, then this would go, be diverted from here to that other program.
So that's when the Senator Burdick, actually, that's part of the reason that my instructions to the would be to the work session, take that $20 million out of this budget for the time being until that plan is finalized and the directions for that money.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And thanks.
Thank you for that information as well. Any further questions at this juncture? Come on, we gotta have some questions.
These guys always have questions.
Are we gonna go through the presentation, or are we gonna just...
Well, I'd be glad to respond to Representative Packard if you'd like me to do that right now, Mr. Chair.
Well...
Or we can just...
Why don't you respond to Representative Schrader first and then Representative Packard? Basic question that I'm going to be trying to figure out throughout the presentation will be, there's a very small, historically a very, very small commission that now, if it got $20 million, it would have a huge responsibility. From the original LFO report, looks like the commission has been fairly untried to date, either through lack of FTE or just, you know, it's fairly new in terms of reorganization. So I'm a little bit uncomfortable in, you know, what's the track record for you guys being able to administer this? And I read an LFO report, we've had trouble even getting the dollars to you from, you know, the asset forfeiture account. You've been unable to get the money from that. So I'm thinking, geez, you guys are going to have to ride herd on the local programs a little bit to make sure they're doing what they say they're doing. At least I assume that's part of your function. So I'm a little uncomfortable that this, not that it's any comment on your ability, but I'm a little uncomfortable that this whole idea has been assigned to you guys, I guess. And I need a little confidence builder, so to speak. So I'm going to be looking for that, I guess, throughout the report. Is that
sure?
Sure. I see. So you're not looking for a response at that point?
Not right
now. It might be premature since you haven't given the whole report, but at some point, yeah. Okay, Representative Patrick.
I'll listen to the response first.
Well, he's going to demonstrate his confidence. You know, Bill's representative first to hear.
Oh,
so it's mere words at this time here. I mean, this is an earned trust, I think.
Anyway, I don't want to get in the middle of this.
Okay. Why don't you just continue with your...
I don't want to get in the middle either, but I don't think I have to.
Yeah. Why don't you continue with your report, help build Representative Schrader's confidence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to discuss a little bit about the program areas and how the budget affects those, and I'll do that starting with the core commission functions first and then move on to juvenile crime prevention. Some of you who either have served on judiciary or have been around judiciary will probably recognize this little chart. This is the movie version of the sentencing guidelines. What we do is we take every felony, we give it a crime seriousness ranking, so murder is at the top and simple drug possession is at the bottom. We have 9 categories of criminal history that develop either for felony or misdemeanor, whether it's a person or non-person offense, and plug numbers into that chart. And so the intersection of your crime seriousness and criminal history sets a presumptive sentence, which is the starting point for the judge. And then the judge has the flexibility within certain limitations that are in statute and rule to do what we call departure sentences. And so there is it's a sentence that gives a specific number where you're going to, how many days you're going to go to jail, how many months you're going to go to prison, and establish some parameters around that. But also is not just an indeterminate system, which is under the previous sentencing system where a judge could do anything up to 5 years. And the problem that Oregon had with that system is that it failed to build the capacity necessary to meet the demands. And so while judges had pretty much absolute authority to put people in prison, the parole board at the other end had the same absolute authority to let them out. And when you combine that with a lack of investment in prison cells, we had a severe overcrowding problem. And so we went to the sentencing guideline system in part to make sure to limit the entries and to set numbers on how long those people are going to stay, but also to close off the back end and limit the release and time credit authority from that perspective.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berzanski.
referencing the Tetris, and I've been talking over here, conversing and plotting, I've been scheming regarding the Simpson guidelines. And from our understanding, historically, what we've heard is that when they were put in place, it was always intended that once they were in place, that the legislature at some point would come back and make adjustments once we saw them run for 2 to 4 years and see where we're at. Unfortunately, that did not happen. 89 is when they went into effect. And for whatever reason, more than likely political, in 93, there are some different things that were looked at but didn't get pushed through or allowed to go through the process. And now we're seeing a lot of stuff happening through the initiative process. And we're wondering at some point as we work this budget and maybe even with the Department of Corrections, if we don't want to have a budget note or some type of focus to maybe during the interim period start this review and look at where we're at. Because to me, it's very clear what we have currently in the sentencing guidelines is not adequate to address the need of safety and being proper or accountable sentences, and that's one reason I think you're seeing the big push for mandatory minimum sentencing. And so one of the things that we are both hoping that we'd be able to do is during the interim period make sure there's enough funding to have a study go on so we can make the adjustments and get things back in the perspective of where the judges are going to actually be doing their job, with the understanding that hopefully the next legislature will make the adjustments to raise the threshold of the presumptive sentence from what we see today.
Mr. Chairman, I think your point is an excellent one. The problem is that we created sentencing guidelines to deal with an overcrowding issue. It wasn't, unfortunately, dealing with the public safety, community safety, what is a proper sanction or anything else. It was, how do we create a system that takes people in the front door at the same time releasing somewhat out the back door? And I think you make an excellent point, particularly in the area that we've never looked at it clearly to delineate what is a proper sanction, the proper method of dealing with a person, not a canned approach of one size fits all. And how do we deal specifically with a problem? And I think that's been one of the charges that they've had in their agency to do. Unfortunately, it comes back to the legislature, is not really giving them the independent resources in which to conduct those things. It was like I was trying to point out earlier, you're taking on more and more responsibilities. The governor's moving this juvenile crime section and all these things. Unless we fund it, as Phil said, he has a person and a half or a half-time person, staff member, and himself. And it's a job that certainly won't get done. We'll be back there 2 years from now saying, well, should we abolish our agency? We don't see anything being done. Well, I think we need to look at ourselves. That budget note is certainly an appropriate method to say, let's generate the information, let's make an informed decision, and a deliberate reason of why we do things based upon what we feel are solid recommendations. And I would support such a budget.
You
want to
augment those thoughts? Yeah, I just wanted to say that Representative Zansky and I have been talking about this. I think it's a good idea that we include something as a budget note. It is a substantial problem, and especially with what happened with, was it 11? Which bill was it last time that put us back on the
1145?
Switching back to 1145, that's caused some substantial, I think, some substantial differences in what we're doing with criminal justice, how the sentencing guidelines are implemented, what people think are serious sentences and what people don't think are serious sentences, what kind of deterrent effects are out there. And as we look at, I mean, we're going to have Department of Corrections budget next, I think, or if you're right around the corner, you know, that it's a substantial cost. It's a substantial cost not only to the state, but it's a substantial cost to local jurisdictions to maintain their jails, to maintain their DA's office on the courts. These sentencing guidelines that he just showed you are what's driving pretty much a lot of the costs associated with a lot of what's been going on in the criminal justice system in terms of the incarceration
portion of it, the probationary portion of it, and all those. And, you know, if there's money to be spent at one level to review those, I can't think of money that's going to be really better spent in terms of the adult justice system, in terms of the review of the guidelines, because I think it's crucial and it's driving the whole system. And I think we even put in stat, what is it, it takes 38 votes to change the guidelines. 36 votes to change the sentencing guidelines.
Not the sentencing guidelines, Measure 11.
Measure 11. No, but I think even to change the sentencing guidelines.
No. Only sentences that are going to pass.
Simple
majority. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. Measure 10 is the one that is the driver. Senator Hanna, I think the other thing I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I understand that it was definitely resource-driven, that was the primary, but also making sure there's some type of uniformity throughout the state as to if someone gets convicted of whatever the crime is in whatever county is similar. And that's why there's, on the back, the departure factors of aggravating and mitigating. So the court has a box to start off with and then go up or down depending on the case by case. But what we've seen is now there's been so much being driven into these mandatory minimums. And we're going to see some here for property crime as well. And it's just that we're having three or four different overlays that you have to look at to see how you sentence somebody compared to bringing everything back in and making the adjustment and making sure that we have the resources to do that and to take care of whatever we need. I think it'd be better for planning for the future for DOC as well, mm-hmm. to what type of safe requirements we need.
Well, are you talking about a budget note that allocate resources to study the impact of existing sentencing guidelines?
Existing sentencing structures, because we're outside of just the guidelines. We've got Measure 11, we've got various different enhancements, and we're going to see some more that's going to come through this committee. And I know in previous times, because of the federal, they have such a high impact, it's not going to be done. But what more than likely will occur next is you'll see another initiative coming out. And as we saw what happened with Measure 11, it put a general fund at a deficit of about $1 billion for about a 7 or 8 year period that impacts in so many other areas. So it seems like it's a good time for us to make this commitment to try to get things back in line. And I only say in line because you have three or four different components of how you, or what you look at to see if you're going to sentence or how you sentence an individual based on the crime. The other part is that I know that we've talked about this in our policy side on the House of maybe having an interim group, but that's something that I think we as a committee on the fiscal end need to make certain that if we're supporting of it, that something does come together and the resources are there to actually put something together to come back and reviewed in 2 years.
Well, and that's, I guess, the issue I'm raising is that I think there's as much policy and substantive discussion there, and we need direction before we can start making policy or budget notes.
Well,
would be my concern.
Let's share this. But the purpose of this commission is to recommend policy. That's their charge and that's their purpose. And all we're asking them to do is to look at the sentencing guidelines and look at the things and do kind of a report back to the legislature or the interim judiciary committee or something like that, so that we can move forward and make some policy decisions. We're asking for policy recommendations, which is
that's what I made the point. We're talking about budget note funding for existing sentencing guidelines. You know, their impact. That's one thing. You know, to go out and study existing policy guidelines or sentencing guidelines and see what could be done to improve them, that's substantive.
And I support both, don't get me wrong. I absolutely support both.
Might offer a counter alternative to my colleagues in the House. What you might want to do is the Federal Justice Commission has some grant monies and federal funds available. What we might do is to urge the agency to apply for some federal grant funds, report back to the emergency board to conduct an interim study or review, an independent review of the sentencing guidelines with
directions, come back with some specific recommendations for the next session, and working in tandem with the Interim Judiciary Commission. So then we get away from the policy and budget issues. We're just urging them to apply for some federal funds to conduct your study.
In context, the thing I always worry about when I hear about these things is that we have all the people that are on the inside working on this. I would like to make sure that if indeed we're trying to encourage good policy alternatives come before this legislative body, you know, that's the way from this, obviously, but the legislative body, and you want some public members on there that have maybe a different view of the system and yet, you know, are a meaningful part of this whole dialogue. So you just don't want to have the attorneys, the judges, the professionals, and you need some lay people involved to get the truth there. If you're going to come back to something that's going to stand up to the scrutiny of the legislature or to the citizens when it comes to passing another ballot measure, like President Krasinski's talking about.
That's true. The only reason I made that comment or suggestion was you're going to ask for this information. Then you have to fund a position to do it and not anticipate that we'll put additional responsibility over an agency without making the resources. You could also include in your budget note directions for the commission itself to review the information and submit it in the form of a report. We do have broad representation on the commission. There are people on there that are attorneys, law enforcement, but there's some other citizens too.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Normal people, that's what you were referring to.
Civilians.
I call them And Mr. Chair, Ms. Lemon said that we may already have another vehicle, I think House Bill 2454, that maybe one that can be used as a vehicle.
Okay.
It's been referred to this committee. It's either the Ways and Means Committee, and I don't believe it's been assigned yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can confirm that, Brian. The bill, I have a copy of it, says the criminal justification shall conduct a review of the current sentencing processes and sentencing guidelines to determine if it's got about 3 or 4 bullets under that. So, and no later than November 1st, 2000, the commission shall submit a report containing its findings and recommendations and provide a report to the Interim Judiciary Committee. So it's essentially a vehicle to carry out that policy, and that's the one that I mentioned hasn't had a fiscal impact on it yet. But I share Senator Hannah's concerns about adding more responsibility on it.
I think we all do. I also think that the courts have a work group on the guidelines that's going. Are you aware of that, Bill? I think the courts have a group that's studying the guidelines too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, they had a sentencing work group. I'm not aware that that's still in operation. That Judge Marcus, I think, was doing some work in that area from Portland.
Well, my former boss was appointed to that and still working
on
it. Maybe we can gather that together.
Your former boss is also on the Sentencing Guidelines Committee of the Criminal Justice Commission. So if I can just wrap this up a little bit, Mr. Chair. 2454, as written now, is a little different than what the discussion's been here. The intent, as I understand it, of that legislation is to have the commission study on how to make the guidelines discretionary instead of mandatory. And that is a different question than trying to look at all the sentencing schemes we have together and put them together in one cohesive, comprehensive, graduated sentencing system. And so I think in order to do what you've been talking about today, there will have to be some policy changes to that legislation. I should also let you know that that bill has been amended with a particular sentencing provision that carries a fiscal impact, and that's the primary reason it's down here. So there are -1, I think, amendments to 2454, and so that issue is going to have to be resolved as well. The other thing I would just add, Mr. Chair, is there have been efforts to, it's not so much a technical issue as it is a political issue, and to get the people together who can agree on what the state sentencing policy should be, whether that includes mandatory minimums for what crimes, what the sentence limits should be, and try to forge a compromise. So anything that you give to us, I think, need to include some very close involvement with the Legislative Judiciary Committees, because it's going to come back into those committees to make the change, any recommendations and changes that come out of our process.
So I've just, what I'm more looking at is maybe not, I mean, I think Measure 11 is something that is voted in by the people, something we're dealing with and trying to live with, and there's a huge policy debate going on. I'm really primarily interested in the sentencing guidelines and how they work and their flexibility and how they work within the scope of the criminal justice system and what they're doing for our predictability and all those kinds of things. You know, and whether they're serving the deterrence and reclamation purposes that depended upon how, where we're at. But I'd be interested to get from you some numbers on what it would cost us to be able to do, for the commission to do something like that, what would be necessary for that, so we can take a look at that as we, if we're going to consider House Bill 2454 as well as your budget, as well as the Department of Corrections budget, that we could make some, we could make some decisions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Packard, I think we're pretty well set up to do that. We may ask for a little additional help, but that's kind of our primary funded mission right now. I think we're in a reasonable position to do that. What I would tell you and what I told Chair Mannix upstairs after they passed this bill was that in statute we have a primary duty, which we are really not able to spend an awful lot of time on, and certainly not as much as we would like to respond to what we're supposed to be doing. And so my real concern is that the legislature is kind of telling us to do one thing and funding us to do another, and so at some point we would like your assistance in making those ends meet.
Well, it went from $700,000 to $24 million.
If you would put that in the core budget, I can guarantee you we would have the best darn sentencing report you've ever seen in your life. anything you want. I would say, Mr. Chair, that when we are fully staffed and equipped, we produce annual sentencing reports. And for every grid block here, we can tell you who went in there, what their crime was, what their criminal history was, what if a judge went above or below the recommended sentence, basically why that happened, and also just from a compliance standpoint, how many departure sentences were taken out of each grid block. And that's basically what I use as kind of a thermometer of satisfaction in the criminal justice community with what the level of those sentences are. And there are several grid blocks where you will see 50% departure rates and up, and whether or not set up to do that. And so I think, and that kind of thing, I think, helps us focus on what the issues are. The other thing I would point out is that when once the sentencing guidelines, the ability of the Department of Corrections to reduce a sentence and let someone out early with a parole board shrunk dramatically. But that same restriction on the authority at the local level in the jails did not occur. And so if a local jail has not built the capacity to keep up with the changes in crime in their community, things start running amok, and I think that creates more of a potential to have people leapfrog into the state system. And as we look at with 1145, that's kind of a transitional measure because it's a state-funded local resource. But what we are seeing increasingly is, either through statute or through the departure process under the guidelines, people leapfrogging 1145 and going to a 13-month sentence just because the state paid the bill for that. And so it's those kind of issues that I think would really do need some work. It's very appropriate for the commission to do that, and we would look forward to that discussion with you.
What would you do in the normal interim with the commission relative assistance guidelines, even without an additional bill passage or
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nicewarner, what we would do is make sure that we're still in some ways playing catch-up from the 95 when we did not have a data entry person. So we're what we did was start up with the data that we have now. We're current on 98, 99 and working our way back as we can. We've also had some staff turnover, which has slowed things down and prevented me from giving another one of these reports that's more current beyond 1994. But what we would do is make sure the data is entered. We would audit that data so we have confidence that it tells us what we need to do, what we need to have. There are some counties who are either under-reporting or not reporting. We would have a need to have a discussion with them about getting them back in the loop. And then once we have that, we again can tell you who's being sentenced for what, for how long, and start looking at where we think the problems are. What the data shows us where we think the problems are. We have an advisory committee with a judge and a DA and a defense attorney and folks, and we can use the those associations to go out and kind of troll a little bit and get some suggestions. And that is the kind of process that I would expect that we would be able to do in kind of the normal course. It's, and that kind of analysis is something that we would do in the ordinary course. It's the matching it up with the policy piece and working with the judiciary committees on where from here is always the tough part, because that involves the politics and that involves the funding, or the eventual funding you're going to have.
I guess my question is, I know you haven't had the staff to coordinate everything, but I mean, typically as we're getting more into the mode, as you're going to report the statistics, gather the statistics, what's the Criminal Justice Commission going to do in terms of, when I flip to the presentation that says improve the effectiveness and efficiency of the state and local criminal justice system by providing centralized and impartial forum for statewide policy development and planning. What policies are you going to bring forth? I mean, is it the plan, the working plan of the commission to bring forward some policy recommendations? Were there policy recommendations that were brought forth this time for the legislature to consider? I'm just trying to see where we're going. If you don't have the staff, you don't have the staff to do the policy piece of it. And if so, I feel like we need something to move forward on the sentencing guidelines. So I want to give you the tools, but I'm asking where you're going.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, we have not, the commission has not spent a lot of time on the sentencing policy issue. And we've spent a lot of time getting the lay members up to speed on what the system is, and teaching people who know absolutely nothing about the criminal justice system something about it, what the component pieces are, some of the differences, how the pieces are funded, and how the puzzle fits together. They are very interested in, obviously, in data, what we have, what we don't have, what we need to have, and that I was very encouraged with your discussion with the major criminal justice agencies and bringing them in here and at one time, because the commission has been very interested in that as well. And I think that was one of the main areas that they want to spend a lot of time on during the year, is looking at the information that we have and need to make the policy choices and recommendations to you. But in terms of looking at sentencing policy and trying to bring something forward to you, that was not in our work plan for the coming biennium.
Yeah, can you tell me then what's in the work plan for the upcoming biennium so I have a good understanding?
We do. On the three areas that the commission wanted to focus on, one was data systems, the quality, the coordination, and the availability. Every time we had an agency or a component of the criminal justice system come in, they kept talking about information they want and don't have. And because that was a common theme, that's one thing that the commission wanted to focus in on. Second thing is to look at, I guess for lack of a better term, a balanced criminal justice system. In recent years, we've spent an awful lot of time and money building the state end, building prisons, and not so much in looking at other aspects of the system. And as I'm sure you know, people, DAs come in and say, we need help. Judges come in and say, we need help. Police officers come in and say, we need help. And the commission believes it has something to contribute to, again, taking a bigger picture look at how those component pieces add up, how they fit together, and where some of the gaps are. And then the third issue is to try to look at, identify some areas where we can identify the big picture interactions where we can look at some efficiencies and how we have three or four levels of police agencies in this state. Are there some opportunities there to make things work a little better? And we've heard from the state police and their cooperative policing agreements and some things around that area. So those were kind of the three areas the commission wanted to spend more time working on in the next five years.
Any other questions? Anything you want to wrap up with, Bill?
Talking to Nat.
I'm not sure if Phil is done, but are you done, Phil?
Well, I can spend more time talking about the particulars of what we do and how we do it and how funding plays into it, or whatever you'd like.
You're dying, we're not. I guess what they pay us a big bucks for. I somehow just in that pause, I thought you were done.
No, the other thing to respond to in a package on some of the policy things that we've done, we have held a series of public forums on public safety related ballot measures. And the goal on that has been really to try to focus the attention of the criminal justice community on several initiative measures in particular that haven't really been explored through the legislative process and do have a lot of effect on the public safety system. We started with the Measure 40, which was the original victim's rights measure. We held one last summer on Measure 61, which is the major crimes initiative, and also on Measure 67, which is the medical marijuana initiative.
Who attended those forums?
We invited in each of those proponents, opponents, and the people who we thought were interested parties. For example, on medical marijuana, we had the chief petitioners, we had the political action committee that opposed, we had the health division, we had the medical association, ACLU, prosecutors, law enforcement. We spent a whole afternoon just trying to parse out what the policy implications were. I think, frankly, that was the first time where the issue of use of medical marijuana in correctional facilities had come up. And we spent a fair amount of time talking about how the affirmative defense and the choice of evils process would work, and that's another thing that the legislature is addressing in House Bill 3052. And frankly, up until, from my own personal perspective, I talked to a lot of law enforcement and prosecutors and public safety people, and they had no idea what the measure did, what any of the implications were, and it wasn't really even on their radar screen. And so, from my perspective, I feel like the commission did a real public service, first of all, in kind of getting the word out, and second of all, bringing all those people together and having a discussion. And I think one of the things that did come out of that was the recognition there are some valid arguments on both sides, and just because you're polarizing the election process, there's still some things you're going to have to deal with that there are honest and legitimate differences on. The other thing I would mention on the sentencing piece is we do have a $300,000 grant from the National Institute of Justice to study the impact of Measure 11. That got to be a little controversial during the interim, just because Measure 11 is still kind of a lightning rod. What that grant does, just for the committee's information, is it gives us, we have a contract with the RAND Corporation in California, who is a nationally recognized institution for public safety research. And we have coordinated with them to do the bulk of the research. And what we're going to do is run some focus groups in Multnomah, Marion, and Lane counties where we can look at the individual system impacts of Measure 11, whether that's increased pretrial detention stays in jail, whether it's increased plea bargaining or more trials or whatever, and then try to document the impact of a major sentencing change like that on the criminal justice system. And it's that last piece that I think really caught the attention of the feds and then got us the money, because a lot of people are having to get tough on crime laws, but no one's really kind of taken a step back and look at some of the system impacts. And so that has been slow getting started. We've had some problems getting contracts drafted that meet what RAND wants to do and what the AG likes to have in them. But that contract is in the AG's office for final review, and we hope to get that jump started right away and have something for next spring.
I'd like to see, along those lines, like I thought I mentioned in the narrative, I'd like to see it's kind of a date certain when you're going to have, you know, it done, you know, at least a framework so we can have something to base next session's progress on. And then I assume also you'll study, it'd be nice to see if you guys study bed projections also, whether with regard to OIA as well as DOC, and see if they match up with what, quite, I think, quite frankly, what we're getting from DAS and the Economic Analysis Department, because you'll have a little more in-depth information, I assume, with the grant that you're going to pursue.
Mr. Administrator, you would like to see us try to match up what the current projections are I guess 94 and see how close we're coming.
I guess my point is I'm not so as much interested in all the little innuendo things about how it's going to affect the internal workings of the justice system. I believe that may be fine. I'm mostly interested. The biggest piece of information for me is John Key Legislator is, you know, what's the impact on the prison system? That's our biggest cost, $1 billion over the next several biennium. Lloyd talked about that. So we've got one set of data that I haven't seen the basis for assumption-wise. It's been tracking pretty well the last three times they've run this data, but it'd be interesting to know as we get out there a little ways. One of my basic intentions is as we start locking up these ballot measure 11 offenders to commit multiple crimes, that the rate of increase in the system is not going to be as it's currently projected. And I have absolutely no knowledge upon which to base that other than common sense. And that often doesn't work in this body. So I'm very curious to see if your study will apply, some data to it and say, no, sir, indeed it doesn't work, or it is your brand doesn't. And give us some data to work on, because I think we're just getting exponential projections based on what attorneys are doing, what we think is happening, and not taking into account sometimes the longer range.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, one of the things I specifically wanted in the RAND research contract was some attempt to put an empirical explanation and see if what data we have that either confirms or rebuts or at least fleshes out the correlation between the passage of Measure 11 and the sentences that are imposed under Measure 11 and the drop in reported violent crime since. And that, I think, if nothing else, will be a substantial contribution to what we're doing here in Oregon.
Representative Patrick, I'm trying to get a better understanding. I think it's great that we're gathering the data and trying to look at it, but I'm trying to get an understanding. So, if I'm looking through your agency duties on pages 2 and 3 of your presentation packet that you handed out, and I'm trying to see from my perspective, compared to the over $1 million that was used to fund the Criminal Justice Commission last time, what we're able to net out as results that apply to, you know, to each of these kind of subheadings underneath what your primary duties are. And I'm trying to get a good understanding, and I'm trying to look at your work plan, that you get the 3 points in your work plan, and to me a lot of those don't apply necessarily to, I think it's great that we gather data, but I think Criminal Justice Information Systems Group, the Teachers Group, is kind of tasked with that by statute, I guess, is how that's tasked. So I don't understand what I understand that maybe you're asking them to do some things for coordination efforts so you can get data better, but that's something else. The balanced criminal justice system, that's kind of broad and amorphous. And then the third thing was the effectiveness of police agencies working together and the agreements to work together that the state police are already working on. And I mean, kind of cooperative policing agreements. And so what I'm trying to get is, what do we get for $1 million? That applies to, what's the commission done to address the capacity in each of jails and prisons, and whether additional or different facilities are necessary. I've sent a memo to all the group about hot bunking and, placement of those. And are you guys looking in that policy room? I'm trying to get where we're going with this from a working plan so that the commission and the commission's doing something that's helpful to the legislature as well. And so I'm trying to, can you address those?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Package, that is, I think, the nut of the question of the difference between what the statute says we're supposed to do and what we're funded to do. Again, I have roughly half of my FTE that are devoted almost exclusively to sentencing guidelines. And so that means that the clerical person receives hard copy reports from the sentencing courts and the DA's offices We put those together. We put them into a database. I have a research analyst who audits that, puts the pieces together, gets those in a format where we can analyze them and do some of the analysis. I have a program manager who basically is in charge of the rulemaking, so all the crimes and sentencing changes that the legislature passes are incorporated into that. We have the rulemaking process. We go out and do training to practitioners. We serve in an advisory capacity where if a probation officer in Josephine County says, how do I do this or what can I do with this person, we provide them with that kind of advice. But that is half my FTE. My fourth FTE is an office manager who is strictly administrative. 4.5 gets the asset forfeiture oversight. That is a half the research analyst and me. I have administrative duties in the agency. I serve on a lot of task forces and advisory bodies and do a lot of policy development and advice giving, and that doesn't leave an awful lot of time to get toward a comprehensive criminal justice policy or plan. That's the short answer to your question. In terms of what you get out of our activities, when you are a planning and policy development body, I've had a real hard time coming up with tangible performance measures. You know, things like the number of meetings attended is not any kind of meaningful measurement about the productivity or the meaningfulness of what we do. The primary benefit that we provide is in the core funded duty, and that's the sentencing guidelines. We can tell when the legislature says we want to increase penalties for car theft. We say, okay, what do you want to do? And we can provide you with, I think, pretty good information about how that's being handled now, and then the way we operate the fiscal impact process now is rather than just looking at the data and that's it, we call around the counties and talk to judges and talk to DAs and say, if the legislature does this, you will do. And after last session, Representative Mitchell will be very pleased to know we do a lot more of that contacting. We learned a lot from that experience, and I think we do a much better job. And I would not want to be judged by our performance on the mail theft bill, but I know that's when it's always your big mistakes that stand out in people's minds. But that, I think, is the primary function that we're doing. I think we're doing a pretty good job of, and that is a very worthwhile thing to do. But in terms of the bigger picture and putting the pieces together, we've had a struggle both at the commission level in figuring out where we want to focus, where they want to focus, and direct staff, and the horses to go out and do that.
Thank you. Mr. Curtis, I guess I'm kind of at a loss, or I know Mr. Lemon he's the staff guy for the commission, and the commission's the one who really should set the agenda and see what's going on. And I'm concerned that if the commission's not doing what's within what I feel is the primary scope, or what's listed as the primary duties of the commission, how we're funding them and how those monies are being spent, and there's no oversight to make sure that that's going down the road. I see a lot of these things as things that aren't being addressed, if those are the primary 3 points of the work plan. And I don't know as a legislator by how we address that. So I look to the senior senator from Ashland and chair staff to, I don't understand how we address that as a legislative body as we move to funding something like this. I guess it goes back to the question Representative Minnis kind of asked about originally about how do we keep things going down the chute to keep the commission on what the focus is supposed to be. Any ideas?
Chris, it's the age old accountability issue. You define it in statute, hold them accountable through the budget process. End of story. That's how it's supposed to work.
I know what it looks like when I see it. But I don't know how to define it any better than that.
That sounds like my mother-in-law was cooking.
Yeah. I know what it goes in there, but I'm pretty sure what the end product is going to be.
Well, my frustration is that I think that by statute they're supposed to do a lot of these great things, and I think that they're noble goals, but I'm looking for output from what's an output and where they're going in the future for their work plan.
And we haven't funded them legitimately. I mean, I don't fault the agency for not
expand the watching resource and having volumes of studies and reports, they haven't been given the time to conduct all those things. They've been given the time to the charge to do it, but how can you can only humanly do it so much?
But Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, I don't see the commissioners here saying we don't have, you know, and maybe they can't because the government recommends the budget. Maybe that's how it works, but I don't have them here saying, listen, this is our primary duty by statute. This is what we're going to do. They're talking about the data system. They're talking about the balance in the criminal justice system and the effectiveness of cooperative policing agreements as their work plan. They're not talking about sentencing guidelines for it. I can't read it.
Okay, go, Rob, go.
They're not talking about alternatives to incarceration. They're not talking about the implementation of community corrections program and what's necessary. They're not talking about the methods of reducing risk of future criminal conduct. That's not what they're doing. It doesn't appear that that's what their work plan, at least, you know, on first blush, doesn't appear that that's what the work plan is. And I don't blame it on Phil. I think that it needs to move down a path. And I, you know, by the same token, that's the only way we control it through the budget process. I don't want to be punitive to. I think the staff is doing the job that the commission wants it to do, but I think the commission's. I don't know what the commission's doing, I guess, in terms of its focus and where it's going. You know, I talk to Phil. I find him very intelligent. He gives us great information when we ask for some of the information. But I'm trying to. If this is supposed to be a policy, broad-based policy body that's supposed to bring recommendations forward, it's not doing its job.
I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right, Representative Patrick. Senator Hannon's absolutely right. Part of the initial definition of clarity and funding that definition and clarity, definition and vision. And it's easy to say, yeah, you're not doing what we want you to do, and if we don't give you the money, then we give them an easy out. I mean, I'd rather give them the money, give them the direction, and then crucify them if they don't do it.
It just rolls up in the CFL, sir. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we can buy the nails. We can buy the nails to prove the fine.
I'd like to switch gears just a little bit, because one of the things that the LFO brings out, and it's a big, and it's a portion of their presentation, is the asset forfeiture, oversight appeal, and one of the problems affecting the revenues, and whether we, I guess there's a bill in to even discontinue that, so I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Certainly. Yeah, would you like me to defer?
Sure, it is my bill and it is Jeff.
That's interesting. But I'd like to know about the program itself, eh?
Well,
Mr. Chair, the legislature passed the Civil Forfeiture Law in 1989 that allowed the state and local governments, when they find drug activity, to file a civil lawsuit against money or property used in that activity and to forfeit it to the government. That was a controversial notion then, and as part of the safeguards enacted in the statute, there was established an oversight committee. Three reps appointed by the speaker, three senators appointed by the president, three people appointed by the governor, and three by the attorney general. That body met very regularly and consistently through 1994, at which time it quit meeting, basically, for 4 years. There were no staff positions associated with that. The work was done at a judiciary committee, and as the committee's workload changed, so did their priorities for staffing the oversight committee. In 1997, the civil forfeiture law was up for sunset review, and there was compromise made that the sunset would be repealed rather than extended, and in exchange, the oversight committee would be reinvigorated and have some dedicated staff. That staff was assigned to the Criminal Justice Commission, the agency, not the body, and funded in part with general fund to get it up and going. And then every time the state or a local government conducts a drug-related forfeiture, they send a small percentage of their proceeds to my agency to fund that position. So that's the budgetary piece. Is it started up with general fund and other funds. This time it is entirely other funds. I have a half-time research analyst who is, conducts that staff. What they do is every time there's a forfeiture, there's a report at seizure. When they seize the property, they send us a report. When they finalize the forfeiture, they send us a report. And then annually, every political subdivision is supposed to send us a report saying, here's the money we got, here's how we use the money, and that's for your oversight. When the committee was reappointed and met again during this interim, basically it found that, first of all, people applied that statute and the deduction provision so many different ways that the data that they had been getting over the last 8 years was useless in terms of being able to tell the legislature or anybody else what kind of forfeitures were being conducted, what the relationship was with criminal charges, and basically it was, if you ask people six different questions, you're going to get six different answers, and that's basically what we're getting. And so over the interim, the committee spent most of its time revising the reporting process and working with forfeiture counsel and law enforcement agencies to say, this is what we want to find out, how do we ask the questions, writing the instructions so everyone had a clear understanding that so we could get information we could use. And the number of reports has remained the same, but there are fewer questions on them, so there's less of a workload burden put on the forfeiting agencies. And I think from that standpoint, some significant progress was made.
Phil, let me interrupt you just a little bit, Representative.
I think the other thing I said on that committee or had up to about a month or so back, we also noted by going through that the interpretations of some of the agencies of how to apply it, certain agencies were not funding the money that was required to go into DEQ, which is the cleanup, as well as to the asset forfeiture, and there's like $30,000 to $5,000 in combination between the two funds or more that was recovered that was supposed to have been paid into the state account. So it's a check and balance.
The I hate staff this. I didn't bother you with it. That's the line chart on our quarterly forfeiture revenue. And as you can see, after we got an opinion from legislative counsel on how the revenue was supposed to be deducted, our revenue went like this. And we've received about $10,000 in what we think are one-time payments with people going back and say, we were doing it wrong, we got to reconcile it, here we go. The other thing the Oversight Committee has done has served as a conduit for information on House Bill 2433, which was passed last session. That bill expanded the stop and search powers of police officers in crime prevention and also enabled them to ask to expand their authority to search for weapons. That also was a fairly controversial piece of legislation, and so there was the requirement in the statute was that law enforcement agencies adopt policies, model policies on how they're going to do that, and also to collect data on complaints that were coming into law enforcement agencies and with particular attention to the type of conduct that was being complained about and the ethnic background of who was making these complaints. And so the committee and primarily the staff person has spent a lot of their time going through and developing that process. We were able to contract with a group out of Portland to do a public opinion survey on whether police conduct related to searches was improving or declining, and what they knew about the law and what they thought the relationship was. Background information
and I guess I'd ask, you seem to indicate that the collection process is now taking care of everyone's, that opinion that came out, everyone, all the different agencies and local jurisdictions are now pretty much up to speed on what they do owe and do pay in on a timely basis.
Mr. Sheriff and Schrader, we don't audit that function, so we don't know if every agency that's doing forfeitures is now reporting. I can tell you that ones that we knew were doing forfeitures, we are starting to see those reports and the money coming in, so I think it's greatly improved. Whether it's all taken care of, I really couldn't answer for you.
A question would be then, who is auditing that?
That is not audited.
That doesn't sound very prudent.
Well, what, Mr. Sheriff, Mr. Schrader, the problem is we're not able to identify through OGIN or other court filings when forfeiture documents are filed.
Yeah.
So we don't have any way of knowing what the level of forfeiture activity is compared to what we're actually getting other than the reports that come in and trying to match those up. since the reports that we were getting basically produced no worthwhile or very little worthwhile information, that didn't serve as a real basis for us. But there aren't a lot of other data sources that we have other than going out and visiting the individual jurisdictions, which we don't have authority or, frankly, the time to do, and the Oversight Committee is not asked to have to do that, to really get in and knuckle down and take more of a regulatory approach rather than an oversight big-picture approach.
Mr. Donna, I'm not sure I like the way this is set up. I mean, it sounds very loosey-goosey and not very accountable. Put you in a position to fail, basically, is the situation. You get what money that they care to give you on a random basis, and occasionally find out that some office you know has been doing some stuff. You kind of ask some questions. That doesn't sound very...
I would characterize it a little differently. I don't think it's random. I don't think it's loosey-goosey. We have taken steps to make sure that the Forfeiture Council and law enforcement agencies know that there is a requirement. They do have this obligation. We've been working very closely with the Narcotics Enforcement Officers Association, the Forfeiture Council Association, with the district attorneys to come up with a reporting system that meets their needs as well as the oversight function. And so I think there are certainly fewer excuses now for people who are not reporting to not report, because I think the word is out, we have made the process easier, and the only issue is that we do not go out and do any kind of inspection or regulatory type activity.
Thank you.
Sure. I just like to say, as a former asset forfeiture counsel, Gordon and I have had our differences on the asset forfeiture advisory committee, but I think that there was some disconnect about what people could do with their funds, and I think that there's some clarity that is established now. I think also you have to remember, too, from an auditing standpoint, all these agencies get audited as well, independently, and now I think that there's some clarity about what they're supposed to pay, how much they're supposed to pay in. At least that's the hope, and DEQ didn't have any oversight either, which is the ones who were supposed to pay prominently being paid as well. So just so you're aware of that.
And then a couple other things is now that everyone knows that the Asset Forfeiture Committee is still ongoing and has the staff to deal with the new reports and understanding that our expect you'll see the agencies comply with those, because the bottom line is they are receiving funds from this. And if the last thing that they want to do is get caught in a position where they're not providing the information and providing a portion of the funds to the state as required, because that will basically tip the cart to the point of where they lose that power. There's been a lot of discussions throughout this country on the federal level and other states of doing away with allowing the agencies that are forfeiting to recoup proceeds, and there's been some discussions of moving those money to different places. We in the state have not found ourselves at that point. I'm very pleased that at least from the people I've worked with understand that this is a very powerful tool they have, and then if it's misperceived by this body, but they're not providing the accountability that's required, that they are going to, in fact, end up losing out this tool. And so I'd say at this point, with things in place, and the other thing, I guess, is that if there's a problem, what the Agriculture Oversight Advisory Committee can do, and it can't be rectified, is you can turn it over to two different agencies, to the Secretary of State for auditing and for enforcement, as well as to the Department of Justice. And that has not been needed to do, and I don't expect in the future that it will be, so long as everyone continues to play by the rules that are now known to everyone. Well, personally, I guess I'm really pleased where we're at. We've got the information out. We just need to whenever you have anybody, and this is not to find fault with any one group or whatever, but when you have that type of potential power to do these, and they've been shown in other parts of the country where sheriffs are buying themselves vehicles, they're selling land deals to friends, some asset forfeiture property and stuff like that, that's why you need to have something that's somewhat independent to give a second life. And I think we're at the place.
And if I might add, in fairness, when you have an oversight committee that's supposed to be asking for information and they're not meeting for 4 years, I think in large part it's human nature. If someone's not asking you for a report or for accountability, over time that's going to go away. But I would agree with what Representative Prezanski has said, and that now the committee is meeting, the word is out, and I think things will continue to get better with that.
One last question, request for information. The biggest portion of your budget is the juvenile crime package, and I guess I'd like to see what some of those crime packages entail, what some of the common themes are that we're being asked to fund, so we can get some coordination. That's been the theme through your testimony and the questions here, is, you know, what's the coordination that we're going to be funding, so that when people ask us what we spend $20 million to $30 million on, you know, what that's all about. I guess I'd like to see someone here from the governor's office. I mean, there's no one here. There's a big chunk of money, and we've got the least amount of testimony, at least not from you, but from the public out here. Well, I assume they're all coming tomorrow. That was probably the plan. And just kind of wanted to see some human, actually some non-human, some of the government people here, too. I don't know about that. I mean, not a regular private citizen person.
Mr. Chairman, if there's a wreck on this committee, please send it in his direction.
Yeah. We've got someone from the governor's office to talk to us about
it. Yeah. We've met the enemy and he is us. Is that...
Mr. Chair, if I may, if there was a presentation in the OIA budget by many of the government agencies involved in this, we did hand out information at that time. If you didn't get that, or if you want more or different information, I'd like to spend a little time after the meeting to talk to you about that. But that's after discussing with Larry and understanding that was probably going to get cut out of the budget, I did. Chose not to take the committee's time and spend an awful lot of time with that. I certainly can give you more, and we can get you what you need.
Just a comment. At some point, we're going to have to vote on this, and I guess I just want to get some information to vote on. So different concept.
Well, Ms. McGee. Ms. Cherry, to add to Phil's comments, at the meeting during the OIA budget, you were given the county plans for, I believe, all of the counties.
The summaries of all counties and the actual plans for the counties that you represent.
And so those would be the activities that the grants in this budget would be funding. So that information would get you again, but you did provide you that.
The 20-some-odd million, I appreciate it. I mean, we don't need to hear twice that type of thing.
So that figure was a shorter figure.
Okay. Is that a question?
I'm still kind of at a loss for where we're going and what the Justice Commission is doing. I understand. I just read their statutory charge again, and it's what's listed in the presentation package, and I'm just trying to, I guess I'm trying to reconcile with their work plan versus what those statutes say versus what's been done, and get an understanding of that and where they're going. And I don't, I talked to Dale Penn every couple of days, so I guess I can ask him about it, because he's the chair. But it's not clear to me that they're meeting the statutory expectations. If they're not meeting the statutory expectations, what's it going to take for them to meet the statutory expectations? And I guess I can ask, what's that going to take money-wise and position-wise from you, Phil, to bring that back to us? If all you're able to do now is a lot of data gathering, predominantly, and some input on, and a lot of input on what effect of legislation that's passed by this body is, I don't know if Department of Corrections, and I'll ask them the same thing. I don't know if they feel like they can do it as well as the commission can. And I'm trying to, figure out. I think it's great what statutorily you're asked to do, but I don't feel like it's being done, so I'd like to see some direction. I'd like to see some effort spent here, because I think it's a lofty and noble goal. I don't know if it's what you're doing is being duplicated at DOC, and I'll find out in the DOC budget, or maybe you can
let us know that. Maybe we can eliminate what they're doing at GOC and leave it with you and maybe flip some things around. I don't know. I'll talk to the chair about it. I'm interested.
Well, and I want to follow up on Representative Package's comment because it's not only the statutory expectation that isn't being met. What I'm curious about, Phil, is why in your policy packages you're not requesting dollars to meet those expectations. That's what I'm not seeing.
The Mr. Chair, I would answer it this way. The Commission does not feel it has adequate resources to carry out its budgetary duties. When coming into session...
That's fine. My question is, why aren't you asking for it?
When coming into session, we understand what the competing priorities are. I think the Commission just believed that there was little point in asking for a huge package that we saw little chance of getting, whether that's through the governor's office or through this body. And so the commission, I think, took a very conservative approach on what it would ask for and thought it, in terms of what it could possibly get. That would be how I would answer that question.
I think we're going to visit that a little bit more tomorrow. Let's recess. Don't let me adjourn.
Yes, I just want to say, I feel like we're hanging out. We're hanging every little program that can be hung on the Justice Committee and really not what their duties are supposed to be, whether it be the Asset Forfeiture Advisory Committee, whether it be the Juvenile Justice Package, whether it be those. And I think it's good policy. So I'm going to have to see what you come back with. So.
Okay, we are going to reset the public hearing in House Bill 5014 and continue tomorrow. Thank you.